Some things shouldn't be transparent, like stop signs. But what you pay for should always be clear, like Hiller's True Transparency Pricing, always clearly itemized and never any hidden fees. Because you have the right to know what you're paying for. For more information, visit happyhiller.com/true-transparency-pricing. Happy you'll be, or the service is free.
Call the Happy Face Truck today.
Our buddy David Beauclair from the Nashville Post here on the Wake Up Zone. He's always sponsored by the Tennessee Lottery. The Tennessee Lottery is proud to have raised more than $4.6 billion for education.
Morning, David.
Good morning. Good use of ducats.
Thank you. I haven't heard
ducats in a while.
It back.
That was nice.
You do need
to get that back in rotation. Well done.
Well, now that everything's on our cell phone, they're not really ducats
anymore.
Yeah, that's
right. Right, exactly.
I want to start out with the Titans and Mariota and your take, you know, going from week one to week two, and just how, you know, you don't want to overestimate a week two game. But it seems like this one is magnified in importance given what lies ahead. But, you know, frame the whole thing for us, for Marcus, for the Titans.
Well, I think to start with, it's Houston. So, of course, Marcus is hurt. You know, this is a guy who's missed half the games against Houston in his career to start with. And one that he did play last year in Houston, we all remember that one. He didn't make it out of the first half. I mean,
the Titans.
So are you trying to say
he's scared of Houston?
I'm just saying it seems like if it's Houston, Marcus must be hurting. That's just the way it's gone in his career. That's offered as fact without commentary, I guess. It's a funny little injury too, isn't it? I mean, it almost, you know, I know everybody's pinning the blame on William Hayes, and I don't want to say that that's not the case, but if you watch that video, it almost looked like Marcus is grabbing at his hand after the handoff before William Hayes even hits him. I mean, I almost think like the handoff did something to which really when I was watching it Sunday, it's like, holy cow, is this guy going to get hurt handing the ball off? Is that the next thing with him? I mean,
Mr. Glass out there.
Yeah, it's Joe Glass. That's exactly right. I mean, he's getting to the point where you're thinking, okay, injuries are a significant issue with this guy, and that you just can't have that. Now, I mean, he practiced yesterday. Mike Vrabel, who's loathe to talk about injuries, says, barring a setback, I see no reason he'll play Sunday. So I think that speaks to the fact that he will play Sunday. But the big question is, can this guy be healthy enough during a 16-game season to eventually show the things that most of us think he's going to show? And I don't know right now.
Yeah, and I would say, David, even worse than that is the offensive line played pretty good.
Yeah.
On Sunday, it's not like he was getting tacked back there all day long, and he still found a way to get hurt in that game.
Yeah, after what was a low-key offseason and preseason for him, you know, that's the thing that we've heard. The one thing we've heard from consistently from Mike Vrabel about injuries throughout training camp and the preseason was, we have a personalized plan for every player, that we're going to get them through the preseason healthy, and we're going to be ready to go for the start of the regular season. And for the most part, that worked out pretty well. You know, there was some question about Derek Morgan. He ended up being available Sunday. The two rookies didn't make it there. Okay, and then what happens? The first game, you get three of your most important players injured. Now, that's nothing that the Titans did or didn't do in their training. I mean, Delanie Walker gets rolled up and his ankle snaps. You know, Taylor Lewan gets thumped in a concussion. I mean, these are all contact injuries, but it's, you know, so much emphasis was placed on keeping this team healthy throughout the preseason and to the start of the regular season, and then just to get – just to have the game play out the way it did Sunday with the injuries was I imagine everybody in that building on Monday was going, "You got to be kidding me!"
Yeah, yeah, no doubt. We were just talking about the injuries. Now Taylor Lewan probably won't play. If I made a guess, he was denied at the facility yesterday, so I have to assume he's not going to play. Going against Clowney and Watt, how much do you think that's going to impact the offensive line? I know they held up in a temporary basis in a game when someone got hurt in a game. But, man, and then you already don't have Conklin out there. I mean, this could be a little different story going into this game, knowing that you don't have your top offensive tackle out there.
Absolutely. And with Lewan, I mean, you can speak to this. A guy who's in the concussion protocol, if he gets sent home, I mean, that to me is a guy who needs to sit in a dark, quiet room somewhere.
Yeah, that's why I got along.
You know, Mike Vrabel was like, "Oh, you know, I told him to go home, just relax, take care." You know, that sounds nice, but the reality is that's – dude, you need to go home and just
typically
sit in a
Wednesday
quiet
or Thursday. Been in a concussion protocol myself. Is you're jogging on Wednesday or Thursday, and go home. That you're not playing that.
You're not playing that.
That's kind of how I view it.
That's exactly what I thought. And what I've seen, you know, Kevin Pamphile stepped in for him Sunday.
Did a solid job.
He did okay, I've not seen him look like a guy I think can block Jadeveon Clowney all day. To your point, yes, I'm Taylor Lewan, I think, can block Jadeveon Clowney all day. Mm-hmm. Kevin Pamphile, I don't, you know.
Tight end staying in?
I was going to say, and now you don't have Delanie Walker for the shorter, quick throws. I mean, you're looking at Taywan Taylor, a guy in the slot. You know, anybody you put in the slot better be really good. And you're going to have Luke Stocker and whoever else out there chipping on both sides, probably. So you're going to have three, four guys in the patterns at most. I would think most of the day it's going to be a different sort of day for this offense. And that'll be interesting to watch too. Because one thing we've heard ever since January was we're gonna do what we need to do on a week to week basis to beat whatever opponent's in front of us. And okay, let's see how different this offense is. Let's see if Matt LaFleur can dial up a little extra protection to help his quarterback out, or is he gonna keep rolling him out? Is he gonna do, you know, is he gonna do play action and add an extra half second to things? You
are
know,
we gonna see this? Some 21 out there, maybe get both the backs in the backfield, and we haven't seen much of that at all.
Yeah.
Deion Lewis becomes even more important.
I think Deion Lewis, because he is a guy, you know, you can start in the backfield, motion him to the slot or whatever, do mm-hmm. some of those sorts of things. But this is one of those games that Marcus could easily average about 7 yards of completion, because that ball's got to come out quick, and there's not going to be I can't imagine there's going to be a whole lot of deep shots on Sunday.
Now what about the Corey Davis? We were talking about injuries. I mean, they got him on a pitch count. They're tracking it, I guess, you know, with his Fitbit, you know, at practice.
Right.
You know, I mean, I'm sure it's more extensive than a Fitbit, but man, it just astonished me. I mean, I just always feel like maybe it's nutrition or something, because it shouldn't be happening, at least in my eyes. At 23, he should be able to run all day. It's more about conditioning and take care of your body.
Or he's a guy who's just maxed himself out physically to get to this point. You know, has trained so hard, he sort of has pushed his body to the brink. And
he had his rest days during training camp.
Yes, he had plenty of those. And you know, was active, was a guy you couldn't help but notice Sunday. You know, Marcus was looking for him.
You know,
13
well.
Targets was like, you know, you were talking about right before the break, Delanie Walker and what it means not to have him out there.
Mm-hmm.
In the last 4 years, Titans have had two guys targeted 100 times in a season. Rashard Matthews once, Delanie Walker 4 times. You got to go back to Derek Mason, 1999 to 2002, to find the last time a guy on this team has been targeted 100 times or more 4 years in a row. Like, even Frank Wycheck, when he was leading the team in receptions every year, didn't get to that number. So, those throws have to go somewhere, and that's where I go back to the slot guys, particularly this week. But Corey Davis was a guy who was very much
part of the game plan.
If he needs to be, so he needs to be out there Sunday.
Folk, Austin Watson gets the 27-game suspension for his domestic abuse incident arrest. Your thoughts on that? Your thoughts on the Preds' reaction?
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, we talked about it at length back in the summer. I figured like 10 games max was what he was going to get. So, but what really caught my attention was in the official league release, the quote about the suspension there is from Gary Bettman himself, which is really, really unusual. Most suspensions from the NHL come with a quote from Bill Daly, deputy commissioner, maybe. A lot of times it's the director of player discipline or whatever. I can't remember the last time there's been a Gary Bettman quote on a release like that. Usually the only things you get from Bettman are, you know, thoughts on somebody, you know, a legendary figure passing or something like that. So I thought that was the league's attempt to sort of, you know, very subtle attempt to say, this is how seriously we take this issue, because they have, you know, they have taken some heat on it now. So I thought that was interesting.
Well, doesn't it seem like that it's just sort of a manifestation of it being 2018 and things being so radically different now that you can't afford not to have the head of the league out there speaking on this issue.
And I think Gary Bettman saw the way the NFL just epically failed on this whole subject, how baseball even, you know, for a while shuffled its feet. You know, NBA, I can't really think of anything specifically, but still, you know, with the NFL, seeing how the NFL screwed up that badly, you know, on this subject, it was smart of the NHL to be deliberate, but at the same time, be decisive, you know, when they stepped up and delivered the penalty and let the commissioner make the statement.
You know, as for the Predators, you know, as expected, they've just thrown up their hands and said, well, this is a league matter. We work with the league fine. I don't understand how they continue to be. I mean, I don't want to say clueless, because that's not right, but it's not hard to do this correctly.
Well,
if they were so involved in the investigation, like they say, they knew this punishment was coming. They knew what the punishment was going to be. All they have to say is, okay, Austin Watson's been suspended 27 games. We absolutely agree with the punishment. We're not going to appeal or in any way, shape, or form, which to their credit, there's no indication they are, but now we're stepping up our efforts with amend. Here's what we're going to do. Here's how much more money we're going to give. Here's, show that this means something to you, that it's not just lip service to say in there, and we're going to keep working with amend because we're swell people.
Well,
you know, no,
couple
no.
of things.
I mean, show that okay.
Well, and Austin Wilson as well.
Involvement. He's going to have to, but I mean, from the team perspective, it you just say, look, this is just further proof that this is a problem and it's an issue that needs addressing, and we are dedicated to this. So, I mean, you can't just say, yeah, we're just going to keep doing what we've been doing.
A couple of things here, though.
I don't get that at all.
All right, a couple of things here. First of all, the Players Association is going to appeal on Watson's behalf.
But they have to do that. That's not the team. We're talking about the Preds.
Well, yeah, okay. But the other thing, too, is that Sean Henry and David Poile are going to be front and center today at 2 o'clock with the media. What do you want to hear from Sean? What would you ask him?
Just like I say, I mean, what are you going to do? This you've told us for a couple of years that this is an important issue to you. It's obviously not getting through even in your own organization. So what are you going to do to expand your presence here? I don't think the entire Predators organization has to get down on a knee and beg forgiveness from every woman in the world or anything like that. But show me something more than lip service. Show me that this issue really means something to you, and that you take very seriously, and you feel badly that despite your best efforts, somebody in your organization has been, you know, has ended up in this situation.
What you can't have is the political convention speech.
Yeah.
You cannot have something that buttoned up. I mean, this has to be passionate, Senate floor level, really serious emotion. You have to buy into what they're saying. They can't stand there with platitudes making promises that mean nothing in the end.
Does Austin Watson need to be there too as well? or no?
Maybe not today. I mean,
he needs to speak by himself, at least.
It needs to happen soon. I'll give you the... It's the first day of training camp. We've got a lot of things going on. But don't tell me he's not going to be around, you know, and he's not going to speak until he returns from the suspension in December. And then when he does, well, that's in the past. We're moving forward, you know. And that's what we're going to hear a lot of today is... Look, the investigation's done. The NHL's made its ruling. We're moving forward with that. You know, that's not going to cut it either.
All right. Now, you've talked about what they probably should do. Okay, now I'm going to put you in their shoes. What would you do? What would you do today? Would Austin Watson be there? Would you make him be forefront of answering questions? Make him be the apologetic person? Because you as an organization, you actually feel like you've done your part and you're part of men. And hey, there's always going to be some guys that's not going to follow what we're doing and they're going to make mistakes. So let's put him at the forefront and let him answer these freaking questions.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's why I keep asking, should he be there?
I think he should be. He should have his own press conference, whether it's today, tomorrow, whatever. Yeah, you know, like probably afterwards. Like, let the players, let his teammates answer questions about the season, and you know, don't. I mean, they're going to hear questions about Austin Watson. That's going to happen. But try to separate that, and then later in the day, put him front and center. Yes, again, if this is an important issue to you, put him in front of the cameras and the microphones, and say, you sit there. And you answer these questions.
And don't have just a sheet of paper in front of you that you're reading from, like a hostage negotiation.
Not at all.
You know, I've said this, and heartfelt and everything.
I said this when it happened, when he pleaded no contest. I mean, to his credit, if you read the police report, he told the police officer that day, yeah, I hit her. And he went to court and he pleaded no contest. He didn't fight. I mean, to his credit, he has taken responsibility to a pretty good degree to this point. But I agree. I think part of his responsibility is now you sit up there and you answer these questions.
All right, just to extend Blaine's question, and that is how much internal debate do you think there was about releasing him, about cutting him or trading him or whatever?
I don't think there was I'm sure the issue came up, but I don't think it was – ever likely or even close to likely that was going to happen.
Does his status as a player and a good citizen before help him in this situation with the organization?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know, that sort of answers your previous question. Mike Ribeiro was a guy who didn't have a long history with this franchise and had sort of a bad history before he got here and they held on to him. I mean, I don't think there was any question that Austin Watson was going to stick around on this team.
For the rest of the hour, presented by the Tennessee Lottery, our good friend David Beauclair from the Nashville Post right here on the Wake Up Zone. The Tennessee Lottery proud to have raised more than $4.6 billion for education.
David, of course, David Williams stepped down Tuesday as vice chancellor.
He's leaving.
What announced he was leaving, yes. At Vanderbilt. So there's a void, essentially, at athletics director. But your thoughts on David's what I think is sort of complicated legacy?
Yeah, it's I think complicated is a good word. I think I might have even used it in what I wrote. Yeah. I mean, there's no question. In a lot of ways, things have never been better in the athletics department. They've won national championships, four of them in the last decade or so. You know, the baseball one being the most prominent. There's the facilities. Most of the facilities are better than they've been. There's, you know, he's brought in Bryce Drew, who looks like he's going to revitalize that basketball program. He, you know, he's the guy who hired James Franklin, who got the football team into the top 25.
And I keep saying, as we remember, that was not universally hailed on the front end.
Yeah.
And that turned out to be not a home run hire, a grand slam hire.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you can point to a lot of public successes that he's had. You know, privately for years and years, people in the athletics department, people on that campus, you know, grouse about him. Apparently, he is completely resistant to any sort of questioning about what's going on or what he is doing. You know, he like, you can't even have a discussion with him about anything. He's a guy who's late to meetings and then leaves early before the meeting's over. And, you know, so he doesn't get a sense of what the meeting is actually about or what can be had. He's unapproachable by a lot of the people in the athletics department who actually do all the work on a day to day basis. You know, I would venture to guess that 2/3 to 3/4 of the people who work in that building would assume that he doesn't even know their names. You know, he's a big picture guy, and you know, when it comes to, okay, we need to create an indoor, we need to raise money and build an indoor football facility. You know, he can do that. By all accounts, crisis management, he is everything you'd ever want in terms of that. But in terms of creating a good work dynamic and an esprit de corps, if you will, it hasn't happened over there.
No, it hasn't. And, you know, he's been short.
Well, how did he last so long?
Because he made great hires.
Oh.
He made great hires.
Because he does the things that the people outside of the program say things are going great. You know, if you were to talk to people inside the program, there's a lot, you know, but nobody cares about those folks. Like people, you know, Vanderbilt fans care.
The worker bees.
Is the football team winning? I don't care if the marketing director is happy or if the ticket office people are happy. You know, that doesn't matter to me. I just want to know are the teams I like winning. And for the most part, he's delivered that much more so than anybody else ever has.
What would you say is more important, though?
Well, I think it's all part of the
job.
It's
all part of the job. But if you had to say as an AD, you're not going to be perfect. So let's get that out there. So what would be more important, though, if you had to say the hiring of the coaches and having success, or the things you're talking about
as
on the side?
As an athletics director, the number one thing you're going to be judged on is the results of your teams.
Mm-hmm.
I look at the David Williams thing just based on the way you were describing it in terms of how unapproachable he can be. And I immediately thought of Dick Fuld, who was in charge of Lehman Brothers, and the story of he would get out of his car and he had a private elevator built in that would take him to his own floor. So he had to see no one at all, but for about 7 seconds in a day. And that means his own employees. But as long as Lehman Brothers stock was doing what it was supposed to do, i.e. winning games and whatever sport it is based on your hires, no one's really going to bat an eye. But then when the money started to drop, that's when all of a sudden people started to bring all these stories up.
And we know that David, I think, fell short in marketing. Their marketing approach, in my opinion, is Flintstone-esque.
Yeah.
And the stadium issue, I didn't think David came out looking very good. And this is why, and David, again, I think you're a good person to ask this question to. I still like Tim Corbin to be the next AD. It might not happen, but here's why I do like Tim Corbin, is that first of all, he knows how to raise funds. Look at what he's done in his own corner. He also knows how to work that administration/Politburo. He knows his way to the chancellor's office. And also, and most important, Corbin is the consummate consensus builder/politician. And I don't mean politician in a way denigrating him as not being sincere. But just about everybody in every corner of the Vanderbilt community likes or loves Tim. He's friends with every coach, and he has and you know this, David, because you're friends with the Corbins. He has a way of making you feel like you're his best friend.
He knows what the job of coaches is, which I don't know that David Williams ever understood. The way, but a couple things. I think Tim Corbin would be an excellent AD if he decides that's what he wants to do. I don't get the sense that that's what he wants to do, just because it's sort of like he's finally come through the Donnie Everett thing, and you know, he had a 2-year period there where he and the program were in sort of an odd place, and I think during the course of this last season they came out of that, and he's in a way he's sort of revitalized as a baseball coach right now. But there's no question he would be a sensational AD.
His toughest job would be replacing Tim Corbin as baseball coach.
but if you talk to he knows everybody in the country. Like he would have that done in no time. To me, it's interesting. It's been it's been long believed by anybody with connections to the athletics department that if and when David Williams left, that Candace Story Lee, one of his associate ADs, would be the choice. And the fact, I always honestly assumed that he would be able to pick his successor, you know, and that she would be it. And the fact that that hasn't happened. Now, I do know the other thing you've heard for years is that David Williams and Nick Zeppos have been at odds for a long, long time. And that's part of how David Williams ended up in charge of athletics only after years of being in university administration too, doing a lot of other things. It was sort of like they just shoved him off the side. Like, you just go play sports and we'll worry about this over here. So the fact that Candace hasn't been named the successor makes me think that Nick Zeppos won this one a little bit and didn't give him the right to pick his successor. And so I think that makes it difficult or makes it hard to see that she'll be the choice going forward. And other than that, I don't think there is an internal candidate. So we'll have to see where this thing gets going now.
Obviously, you know, we were talking about the Vanderbilt athletics director job and the search they're about to embark on. And it's kind of interesting who's out there. You know, there are some familiar names. I don't see Rick George, who was an associate AD here in the 90s, coming back here. You know, to be truthful, he made a lot of enemies here. but the other interesting name to me is a rising star, Derek Gragg. He's a former Vanderbilt football player. He's the AD at Tulsa. He's a bright guy. He's been at a number of places, and I would imagine he's going to be on the short list.
Yeah, it's funny. You always go through this. The first thing is, well, who has connections to the university? And a guy like that absolutely makes perfect sense. And you would certainly think he would have interest in the job. And that's great. But from a Vanderbilt perspective, don't you want some fresh ideas? Don't you want a fresh set of eyes? Somebody who has worked at a comparable institution? Maybe, you know, Blaine brought it up off the air. You look at what's going on at Stanford. You look at what's going on at Northwestern these days. I mean, it's no longer the smart schools can't be competitive athletically, and Vanderbilt, if it wants to. I mean, now this is the big issue too. Vanderbilt has always underfunded its athletics programs, and the administration has never felt compelled to really step up its efforts to help the athletics department. Is that going to happen here, or are they just going to bring in somebody and handcuff them? And I mean, I don't know, but I think this is an opportunity to get to tap into kind of what's going on in this country and say, we can be just like Stanford, or we can be just like Duke, or, you know, whatever.
Do they run their programs? I know we may not know, but does Stanford, Northwestern, and Wake Forest, all these schools that are comparable to Vanderbilt, do they run their athletic programs like in the funding like those schools do? I mean, I'm wondering what pattern, because I would just want to interview the associate ADs at these places just to get info just like that.
Like, look at Stanford. Stanford spends as much money their approach is, if we're going to have a team, we're going to try and have the best. You know, they win the Director's Cup pretty much every year, which is at, you know, success over all sports and whatnot. I mean, yeah, Stanford spends tons of, like, by all accounts, their sports science, their training methods, though, you know, those sorts of things are right up there with what anybody's doing anywhere in the country. There's opportunity here for Vanderbilt. It's a question of whether the university is going to seize this opportunity.
All right, now if they interviewed David Beauclair for the AD job, what would be your plan for the stadium and funding and the growth, and what would be the order, kind of marketing? What would be your plan to make it successful?
First of all, let me say I'm not as critical as most on this issue. Okay. I mean, the stadium needs to be torn down or redone or whatever they need to do. But my contention is Vanderbilt has had a laundry list of things and stadiums and offices and training rooms and everything that has needed to be upgraded. And over the last decade or so, a lot of things have been done. You know, they've right. sort of, it's the idea, like, check off the smaller items first, and the football stadium is going to be the biggest ticket item. So I'm not offended that they haven't gotten to right. that yet.
It seems like you just got to get started somewhere doing something.
Do you win first and then do the stadium, or
Here's what you do. Forget Field of Dreams. Forget the if you build it, they will come thing.
Right.
What you need to do as Vanderbilt is you need to pay somebody, go to HOK or whatever they're called nowadays, or whoever you want to, and say, give me a stadium play. You need to roll out something and say, this is what we're going to build. Mm. Who wants to help us? You know, because the only way to get people excited about this project is to actually have the project. Now, whether or not that rendering that you roll out today is the stadium you end up having 8 years from now after all the fundraising and then construction and everything else, maybe that's not the case. But you have to say, if I'm the guy, first thing I do is I say, this stadium's getting built. Here's what it's going to be. Who's helping us? Let's go. And then you start from there. Because until Vanderbilt shows now that it actually wants to and will build a stadium, no one's going to believe it. You could say it till you're blue in the face. You actually have to have something that you're going to show people and say, this is what we're working toward. This is what we're raising money for. Let's do this.
All right, final minute. Give me your analysis. Vanderbilt goes to Notre Dame.
Vanderbilt's playing really well right now. I like what they've done these first two games. It's even better than the first two games last year. The problem they're going to have that everybody is going to have with Notre Dame this year is Notre Dame has a terrific and experienced offensive line. And we all know when you have a really good, really tough offensive line, you can make a lot of things happen. And I don't think Vanderbilt is ready to overcome that. I think they'll play well, but I think ultimately they'll sort of get overwhelmed a little bit.
Great hour as always, Boak, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Take care, everybody.